Ray Drummond is business entrepreneur and colonel in the U.S. Army, retired. Ray graduated from the U.S. Military Academy at West Point in 1971 and served primarily in infantry assignments during his 26-year career, culminating with service as chief of staff for the 25th Infantry Division in Hawaii. And as somebody's got to do it, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. And as and as 2nd Brigade commander of the 10th Mountain Division at Fort Drum, New York. Additionally, served 10 years in the 82nd Airborne Division, deployed twice to the Middle East in 89 and 90. Upon retirement in 97, Ray worked in the HR outsourcing industry and then co-founded Excel HR in 2004, headquartered in Alpharetta, and grew this company into a national enterprise with over 150 HR and IT professionals serving companies throughout the U.S. and Canada. Excel HR was bought by Ultimate Software in 2013, and Ray retired as a second time in late summer of 2015. Ray and Susie have lived in Polo for over 18 years and are joined by their daughter, son-in-law, and three grandchildren who have called Polo home for the past 15 years. Ray currently does some consulting and serves on the YMCA board and plays more than a little golf, and he'll probably elaborate on that. Ray's wife, Susie, runs in the morning, and my wife, Nan, and I also walk during that time, and so we've talked to Susie about 5 years, I guess, as she's been running, and saw Ray recently. But it's great to have Ray give his story, and please welcome Ray Drummond.
Thank you, Hines. Hines stole all my thunder, so I got not much else. Yeah, he's ADD, but he gets it all done in a quick time. So I'm going to try to do what he did in 2 minutes and give you a 20-minute version of that. So how do you tell somebody about who you are, where you've been, and where you think you're going? Not an easy task, but like many of us in the room, I'm sure my story is a little bit unusual, and I'll start off with I was born on a kitchen table in Linz, Austria, by a midwife. My mom was an Austrian Hitler Youth member, operated a searchlight to shoot down airplanes, spent most of her teenage years in bomb shelters, and then ran into my father, who was part of the occupation forces in Germany, or in Austria, after World War II. And as things happened, you know, many of the German male no longer were available in the marriage pool, so a lot of the young ladies there were, you know, looking for male company, and that's how I came to be. So the kitchen table, I actually took my wife and I went over to visit. I still have an aunt that's living there in Linz, and she took us to the apartment where my grandparents, my mother, longer story is, my dad was in the American zone. The Danube River split the Russian and the American zone. My mother went to her parents, who lived in the Russian zone, to have me, because, you know, we didn't have hospitals, didn't have doctors. It was midwife brought her in. And then my mother smuggled me back across through the Russian checkpoint, because at that time the word was the Russians lost 20 million males during World War II. And they were seizing male children, at least the rumor was. I think there's some truth to it. But so my mother kind of smuggled me back across into the American zone, and then we lived in a little one-room place for years. But long story short, 10 years later, I came to the United States for the first time. My first language was German. I didn't speak. Actually, I had to repeat first grade in the Department of Defense schools because I didn't understand English well enough, and I got sick, was in the hospital for 3 months with yellow fever, diphtheria, scarlet fever, and whatever else. Quarantined, my mother would come see me every day by the window during the wintertime. So I landed on the shores of what was called Idlewild Airport at that time, JFK, and we stayed with a friend of mine for about a month. And that's when I saw my first ever McDonald's. And this, you know, they had it was a white building with the yellow, big yellow arches, and said over 1 million hamburgers sold, you know. That was about 2 years after Ray Kroc started the company. And I tie that in because Ray Kroc and I had something in common. We both started our first company when we were 56. So great story there. We ended up moving to Florida, and I was blessed to be able to spend 8 through 12th grade in one school. All of my children spent 4 years in four different high schools, both of them. Just, you know, the way the Army was at that time, probably still is. When I was finishing school, I was on track. I had a scholarship at the University of Pennsylvania. I was going to go to med school, and I wanted to be a doctor, and thought that was a noble thing to do and something that I wanted to do with my life. But I'd met a young man in Pennsylvania when my dad was still in the military. He's a West Point grad, became a good friend of the family's, and became a real mentor for me. And my senior year in high school, he came down to visit on his way to Vietnam, and I said, you know what, I'm going to go to West Point. So I started the path to get ready to go to West Point. Ended up going to West Point. His name was Edwin Woods Martin, the most Jesus-like person. Just a great human being. I went to West Point, and 10 days after I got there, I went to his funeral. So that's what still chokes me up, you know, 50 years later. Apologize. He had a great role in my life in showing me other paths, and just, you know, he was a great friend of our family. Tell you a little story his dad told me about him at his funeral. He grew up on an Indian reservation. His dad was an Indian agent out in Arizona, and he grew up on an Indian reservation, didn't have any other white kids. It was just, you know, he and his Indian children friends. And one Christmas, they got him a couple toys, you know, and the next day, he said, Woody, where's your toy? Where's your toys? He said, I gave them to my friends. And it's like, there's only one of him. So I graduated, and as Hines said, I served 26 years in the Army, and I think what I like to tell people is that I was one of those guys, I love leading troops. I love being with soldiers. I love being outside. So part of the reason I say I play more than enough golf is I play maybe 200 rounds a year because I just love being outside. I'm probably the only guy in my peerage who only spent one day in the Pentagon in his whole entire 26-year career. That's why I'm still sane. All the rest of those guys schlepping it out in D.C. traffic. Of course, I got Atlanta traffic now, but I was probably the highlights of my career were leading troops, and I got to lead them at all levels from platoon, which is about 40 people, to brigade, which is about 3,500 people. It's just something that resonated with me, and probably that helped prepare me for what I did in my second career more than anything. I was tracking along. You know, my goal was to be a general officer and spend 40, 42 years serving the country. My dad had a stroke, debilitated. Parents didn't have much money. He was still working to help pay for things. He had a small Army retirement, and, you know, a small Social Security pension. And he was paralyzed from the neck down. I went down and got him into rehab and tried to sort things out. And, you know, starting to look at. I've got a daughter going to Notre Dame, and my son's getting ready to go to college, and now I got to help my parents financially. And the Army doesn't pay a lot of money. Do I need to find another career? And, you know, I call it divine intervention. You call it what you may. It's circumstance, coincidence. But it was a friend of mine who I'd met in a church group when we were stationed at Fort Bragg, belonged to a Catholic church in the community. And he called me out of the blue. I was down in Florida with my parents. He was in Florida. He said, "Hey, Ray, I just went to work for this company. I think you really need to come work with me in this company." I got a job, you know, da-da-da-da-da. Went home, talked to Susie about it, and ended up saying, this is one of those things that comes your way for a reason. Take a good look at it because you're being offered a choice. And I said, I've wanted to do this my whole life, be that, enjoyed it immensely, but time to look at other responsibilities you have and make different paths. So I took a different path and went to work in, you know, civilian field, worked for this company based in Tampa, became their VP of operations, moved the corporate headquarters up to Atlanta, and that's how I got here about 18 years ago. In that, I met another one of these divine interventions. We had this guy sell us something, and my boss and I, it was a privately held company, the owner of the company, we bought this technology, software stuff. When the guy left, my boss says to me, he says, "Ray, why did we buy that?" I said, "I don't know. The guy's good." So we reached out to him and we hired him away to become our VP of sales. And very fortunate for me, great friend, about 15 years younger than I. And he and I started a new product for the company, HR outsourcing, administrative services, managed services. Basically, we did other people's payroll, benefits administration, et cetera, provided a technology platform to do that, made it easy for companies. So I learned the HR business, met Greg in 2002, I think it was. We worked together for about 2 years, and he comes to me and says, "You know, Ray, we need to start our own company." I said, "Okay, I haven't done that before. You know, I mean, it's my first civilian job since being a paper boy. Yeah, why not? How do we do that?" Neither one of us had ever done that. And so we kind of said, "Okay, we got to raise money because, you know, no paycheck coming in, no clients, da-da-da-da-da-da." So we ponied up everything we could, leveraged IRAs, everything that we had, our own assets, and then went to family and friends and raised money. Now, there's something, if you're ever thinking about starting a company, if you want to go to, you want to get investors who you're going to be committed to, family and friends is a good way to go because, you know, the commitment you make is, well, I'll figure out how to pay you back if we're not successful. The happy ending is every one of them probably made 10, 12 times what they invested about 9 years later. But a lot of sleepless nights. I used Tylenol PM for 11 years straight. You know, I couldn't sleep at night. I'd go to sleep, but I'd wake up and, you know, 4,000 things going on. So starting your own business, as Heinz knows, is not for the weak and timid. You gotta really commit yourself and hang in there. Partner and I were the two lowest paid employees for 6 years because we were the last to get paid. And making payroll, you know, growing up, being in the Army, and even when I was working for the company before that, I never thought about P&L. I mean, you know, P&L. I had a budget. When I was a chief of staff, I managed a $250 million budget. Well, it's a lot different when you got to earn that $250 million to manage, you know. Taxpayers are just giving you $250 million to spend. Oh, yeah, I can manage that. How about managing a payroll, you know, when you've got to pay people every 2 weeks and their families and lives depend on it? But great developmental experience, personally and professionally. Extreme pressure with, as I mentioned, with our investors. Never knew what, I mean, I knew what cash flow was because the Army, they paid you once a month, and you know, you're kind of at the end of the month, you're kind of saying, okay, no steaks this week. We're going to eat beans and hot dogs. I thought that was what cash flow was. Cash flow management. And I was the COO, CFO of the company, so I knew every minute of the day how much money we had for 9-10 years that we were running the company. Another fortuitous thing, we had to make a decision. We weren't real happy with the technology platform we were using. We were kind of borrowing it from the company we used to work for. We discovered something called UltiPro, or Ultimate Software. And that was fortuitous. It was a great fit for us. You know, part of our business was we had to hire people to do the services, but we didn't get paid until people were up and running on the technology. We got a little bit of upfront money, but it wasn't ever enough cash to kind of hire all the people we needed to train to be able to do the work. So Ultimate, we could get clients up in half the time that we're on the other software that we're using. So that gave us a little bit of breathing and cushion on our cash flow challenges. They were a great fit for us. They had a great culture. Let me tell you a little about, here's a company that if you're looking for a job, you want to work for. Okay, I got to work for them a long time. Well, actually 2 years. They started in 1992, and the market valuation right now is $7 billion. Four people in a cubicle in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and they believed one thing is take care of your people. If you hire the best people and take care of them better than anybody else will, you will always have happy clients. And in the service business, that's how you grow it, have happy clients. 97% retention rate for clients. And the reason, Scott Shear, the CEO, his mantra is take care of your people and they take care of your clients and they'll take care of the investors. You know, pretty simple business model. But here's what they do. Everybody gets stock when you become a, you know, you got stock options, you know, vest in 3 years. They pay 100% of medical coverage, regardless of what level. If you got a family and it'd be $1,500, they pay $1,500. You never pay a dollar for your medical coverage. They match 40% of your 401k, no limit. 40%. If you put $18,000 in, they put $7,200 in. I mean, they pay for education, certification. I was part of my consulting gig is I help investment groups. I don't know, it's a funky thing. You do a 1 hour phone call and they pay you money. But one guy says, "You know why we picked you?" I said, "No." I said, "We've never found, we can't find anybody who's not working for Ultimate." I said, "There's a reason. There's a reason." But they're a great client. So we became a strategic partner of theirs. And then June of 2000, we were having a hard time catching, you know, still being able to generate enough cash to hire ahead of the curve. And we were definitely afraid. Our primary pipeline was their sales force because they didn't have a managed services product. They just had the software. But they were competing with ADP and other companies who had provided services. And they were, their sales force was out in the field trying to buy, you know, gain new clients that were using ADP, using Ceridian, using other software applications. But to compete with ADP, they needed somebody like us. So we were filling that void kind of under the table as a strategic partner. So we were struggling, and we were afraid to tell one of their sales guys, "Hey, sorry, we just swamped. We can't handle it." you know, that was our biggest concern, because then they'd go look for other solutions. So we were trying to raise money, talk to private equity groups. They wanted too much of the equity stake. They wanted too much control. So we said, that's not going to work. Banks, you know, unless you got a lot of assets, the bank's not going to loan you any money. So we were kind of stagnant. So another fortuitous event, June of 2013, the CEO and the CFO from Ultimate came up to Alpharetta to visit us. Said, we just want to learn more about what you guys do, because you're one of our biggest clients. I said, well, and every time you get a new client, we get new clients. We kind of like that. So we explained the business model. I said, well, what can we do to help you? I said, we need cash. We need money. You know, we need a loan. I said, okay. Let's think about it. We'll get back to you. So Susie and I are in Rome on a vacation, and I got a phone, because never vacation, because wherever I go, I got my laptop, my phone, and, you know, working. And so my partner calls me. He says, Ray, they came back to us, but they don't want to give us a loan. They want to buy the company. I said, sell it. He says, no, we're about ready to sign Google and all these other things. I said, Google's never going to sign with us as a privately held company. Sell it now. Their mantra was, look, we know we need to be in this business. We can either build it ourselves or we can buy you. You know, we can build it ourselves, meaning, you know, you guys, pretty obvious to me that it was, they were, again, they treated us great. They could have held a hammer down on us and said, you know, we're going to do this without you or with you, so, you know, we want you on the cheap. But they were fair, just to show you the kind of people they were. So anyway, we sold the company. Those of you ever going through this, due diligence. What, anybody gone through due diligence in a company? Yeah. Fun times, huh? 10 weeks, 14 hours a day. Because we had, at that point, we'd hired a CFO, but he didn't understand everything. And we had to keep it close hold because we didn't want people to get freaked out about company being sold and everything else. So long time, 14 hours a day. November 15th, 2013, fourth happiest day of my life. Wife, two kids, first, second, and third. My last payroll. It's the last time I had to write a payroll check. And you know what Donald Trump used to say? I signed the front of the check, not the back. I know what he was talking about. I don't ever want to have to sign the front of a check again. Or the back of it. Yeah, front of a check. I guess I do sign front of the check, but most of everything is electronic. Feel very blessed. We were able to return all our investors' funds within 9 years, plus 10 to 12 times what they put in it. So what are my takeaways from that little meandering through 40, 50, 60 years of my life? I've alluded to some. Two big things. One is life choices, and the other is commitment. Life choices. I don't know where, somewhere, you know, I think it was John F. Kennedy's inauguration. Robert Frost did a poem. I think it was he did it at that. It was The Road Less Traveled. I'm sure some of you have heard it. That two roads diverge in the yellow wood. But with that poem spoke to me, and it was, to me, it was a really good life lesson, because I think a sign of maturation and a sign of developing the human insights that you need to negotiate your path through life is the ability to recognize when you're at that fork. Two roads diverged in the yellow wood, you know, and I took the one less traveled. And the first one for me was really probably, and it was an emotional one, was when I decided to go to West Point track instead of going to University of Pennsylvania. I mean, a big change. I didn't at that time realize it, but that's probably the first big one in my life that came along. The second one was meeting my wife. She was a colonel's daughter at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and I was set up on a blind date with her. And I said, I don't do blind dates. I mean, I'm going to see what this chick looks like. I'm going to waste my time, you know. So I walked into where she was working. My roommate at the time's fiance was a friend of hers. I said, God, I hope it's that girl because I'm going to marry that girl. Never spoken to her, but it was just, you know, one of those things. And found out that her dad was retiring and they were leaving to go to Michigan in 56 days. So I said, time for a full court press. 56 days, we went out. And, you know, it took me about 2 weeks to convince her that she really wanted to marry me, even though I knew I was going to marry her, but she didn't realize that in about 2 weeks. And been one of the best blessings in my life. Next fork in the road for me was stay in the military or move on to another career. And Susie and I mean, we were so torn. We pulled the Bible out. You know, we just randomly opened a page and put our finger there and said, speak to me, God. You know, I need help because this is the hardest decision I've ever made in my life. And I don't think we actually ever found a passage, but through the process, we decided to move on and leave the military. And then the next one for me was, you know, here I am. I've been working in a civilian career for about 6.5 years, and my partner comes to me and says, why don't we start our own company? You know, and I'm 56. I got a son that's going through grad school, living here, I'm comfortable, making good money. Hey, you know, I could probably do this for a while, but took the path. And, you know, I mean, it couldn't have been more blessed taking that. Second component is commitment. Never played basketball much, played a little football and baseball, and when I went to move to Florida, eighth grade had a basketball team. Back then, junior high school was seventh, eighth, and ninth. Seventh and eighth played. So I played on the eighth grade basketball team, stumbled around trying to figure out how to shoot hoops, et cetera. Really embarrassed, you know, because didn't understand the nuances of the game. Round ball? I mean, ball's supposed to be, you know, bounce it? So I said to myself, I'm going to be a leading scorer on the ninth grade team. And that summer between eighth and ninth grade, I played basketball every day. I just committed myself to that. And ninth grade, I was a leading scorer on the team. You know, I sit there and say, geez, you know, life kind of goes on, you know, when you really make yourself focus and commit to it, you can do great things. I was going through Ranger School and at Fort Benning. You know, you go to Dahlonega, Florida, and Benning. It's an Army leader. It's really a leadership school, but it teaches field craft, patrolling, and, you know, you lose 30 pounds in 8 weeks. They don't feed you. You walk and climb mountains and crazy stuff, but it's really a leadership. It's kind of like Outward Bound. You know, you can do a lot of civilian companies send folks to Outward Bound because what it does, it instills leadership. For me, what Ranger School did was it told me when I thought I was done, I always had a little more in the tank. And then the next day when I thought I was done, I always had a little more in my tank. And that's what that 56 days of hell does for you. But I said, you know what? I'm going to be the distinguished honor graduate of Ranger School. And 200 guys, about 120 make it through. And the end of it, I was Got still got a little flag, distinguished honor graduate, Ranger School class. Again, commitment, you know, thinking this is something I want to accomplish. 56-day press. I'm not a great schmoozer, but I schmoozed Susie Whitelaw, and that was probably the biggest reward I've ever gotten for commitment. And then lastly, a 56-year-old guy and his partner, neither one have ever started a business. You talk about commitment. You don't succeed. All of you have been in business. You don't succeed unless you really put everything you've got into it. And if you come up short, you're going to be far better off than if you didn't give it the effort that you've made. So, parting thoughts. I had a retirement when I retired from, we actually did a retirement function here when I retired. Well, worked for Ultimate for about almost 2 years and then said, you know, I'm going in, getting paid a lot of money to not do anything because I kind of handed off all of the things that I needed to do. Starting to feel guilty taking a paycheck, you know. I'm sitting there saying, okay, you need to retire. So I retired. They threw a nice retirement function for me. And people that worked for me put together kind of a neat book. It's interesting. But reinforcement to me that I'd had an impact on them is, you know, some of the things they said about my being their leader. I'll quote two that really ring true to me that resonate. If your actions inspire others to dream more, learn more, do more, and become more, you're a leader. And I think that, you know, that says a lot. This one I always thought it was Sun Tzu, but it's from Lao Tzu. A leader is best when people barely know he exists. When his work is done, his aim fulfilled, they will say, we did it ourselves. And I think that's a testament to a real leader, because what you've done is you have leveraged yourself through them and they feel they own what it is that they accomplished. So that's all I've got. I got any questions? I think I hit my timeline. Head didn't hit the ground. Okay. All right.
Any questions? Where'd you go to high school those 4 years before?
Pompano Beach Senior. I actually just went to 50th reunion last weekend. Oh, I was supposed to tell you current. Okay, I think we already talked. Been here 18 years. We've got a lake house in Michigan that we're going to probably spend mid-May through mid-August at this little place that Susie's been going to since she was a little kid. Her grandparents went, but it's Highland Park. It's on a sand dune. These homes are 106 years old, and just a beautiful view of Lake Michigan over on a sand dune. And her dad bought when they were about 38, 39 years ago, and because we didn't have any money in the Army, every time we went, had two-week vacation in the summer, we'd go there with the kids and just have a great time, so our kids are fond of it. Well, the house next door came up, and I had money. I said, the hell, we bought it. It's a 106-year-old place, and the contractor's in there building it, got to redo the retaining wall, redo the foundation. Basically, we paid a ton of money for nothing. And now, we started rebuilding it in January, and I hope to have it done by the end of June, but it's going to be, you know, a kind of a legacy gift to our kids and kids beyond that. I guess that's... Yes?
Do you have any comments on any of your infantry tours leading battalions?
You know, yeah, I'll tell you one. I went to in 1989. I took over a battalion in the 82nd Airborne Division. Battalion's about 750 paratroopers. We were going to Sinai, Egypt. How many are familiar with Sinai? You know, Camp David peace accords, you know, 73 war, Yom Kippur war. Israelis took over the entire Sinai Peninsula. Camp David peace accords, we give it back to Egypt. But stipulation that the Israelis had was we will only sign this if there's an American infantry battalion in the peacekeeping force forever. So Jimmy Carter said, yeah, baby, we'll do that. So I got to take my battalion over there for 6 months. And great experience, tough duty because these guys are out on remote sites. I worry, we're still there today, and I worry about them because they're a great ISIS target. ISIS has run around to Sinai now. We got little outposts of 12, 15 Americans all over, along with Colombians and Fijians, who are the other peacekeeping. But we did that 6 months. While we were there, I made every soldier go on a tour in Cairo. I had two lawyers, a defense counsel and a prosecutor. I said, I don't need you guys. You're in charge of tours to Egypt, and you're in charge of tours to Jerusalem. Okay? Got it? You won't be doing any lawyer stuff here. So, and then I had each company commander, this is before spreadsheets, I had each company commander keep a matrix sheet. Every one of their guys, whether when they'd done their 3 or 4 days in Cairo and 3 or 4 days in the Holy Land. And my goal was every single soldier is going to make that trip. You know, 19, 20-year-old soldiers. They'd have gone back, drank. I made them do it. And I've run into them since. I'm glad you made us do that. But that was, so we come back from that. And, you know, the Army's, when you go on something like that, they want to get your warfighter training back up. So we get 2 weeks leave, everybody's back, and then we go to field every day, or every week, because we're going to a joint, the Army runs what they call joint readiness training centers, national training center, where you actually do mock combat. And it's really realistic. I mean, people don't get killed, but you get assessed. You've got laser equipment that replicates engagements, da-da-da-da-da. But we're getting ready to do that, and we want to do well. And, you know, it's part of getting us back to in case we have to deploy somewhere. So we go. We jump into Fort Chaffee, Arkansas. And we're about 7 days into this 14-day exercise, and the guy running the place calls us out and says, you guys are done, you need to load up your equipment, you're going back to Fort Bragg because you're going to the Middle East. What? So we run, get our stuff, clean it up, put it on trains, fly back. Troops have about 5 days to say goodbye to their families, and we jump on airplanes and we land in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. Then we spent almost nine months there in Saudi Arabia and Iraq. And then we came back. And, you know, one of the neat things was we froze. We had that group of soldiers, because we were going on this deployment, they didn't want to have people ETS and coming out, so they were all extended. And then when we went to Saudi and Iraq, everybody was frozen. So I had a very unusual experience. I had 700-plus soldiers that were with me for the entire 25 months that I was their commander. And it's an unusual experience because I got to know pretty much every soldier there. About 3 years ago, Susie and I went to a reunion of the medical platoon in Las Vegas. About 25 guys show up. It's amazing to see what they've done. You know, some of them, one of them's a PA. One guy's selling cars to Shaquille O'Neal. I mean, just all very different things. But that's it was a interesting experience watching dogs eat charred bodies. Was not high on my list of things, but it was, you know, that war was, you know, the way we ought to have all our wars. George Bush said, you know, we're all, it was done. we could have taken over Iraq, and he said, no, we're not going any further. So we were supporting the Shiites, turning Iraqi weapons over to Shiites to help them with their rebellion against Saddam. But that's one. That's it. Any other questions? Good.
Great.
Thank you.
Great job, yeah. One of the things that that always comes to mind when I hear a talk like Ray's is how do you leverage the experience we've had to the younger people? And I think, you know, if there's ever any interest in you men to try to organize that and make available the other youth in this area, in the polo fields, whatever, that which we've learned, for those that want to know it. Years ago, I put together something called Polo Business Owners Fellowship, and the idea was to get together with men and women in the polo fields that were either had companies or wanted to start companies, and that met for a little while, but it was hard to get some momentum with that. But the thing that our culture doesn't value as much, and it's kind of, I think it's always been a challenge, is the wisdom that us more senior level guys, mature is the word, right? Have and what, how people that are going through what we've gone through can avoid some pitfalls by learning what we've learned and passing that on to them. Great sharing, Ray. Our company does many of the similar things that Ray mentioned, I've got this crazy idea to treat people the way you'd want to be treated. Have you ever heard that one? and it really works, and it's very satisfying when you can give people things that you would want to have, and it really does work in the business community too. Well, thanks for coming, and have yourself a cup of coffee, and hope to see you at the one in August, I believe. So have a great day. Thank you.